One of the great animating beliefs of modern life is that because of modern technology, our world has never before been so interrelated. We wear clothes of cotton, was grown in Honduras, spun in India, and sewn in China. When monks in Myanmar marched, cell phone pictures of their protest are instantaneously sent to New York and London and beamed around the world. But Jay Winnick says that some of this sensation of an interrelated world is actually pretty old stuff. America's founding fathers were fascinated by France and feared that a Napoleonic army could set sail for them. The French, in fact, tried to raise an army to pluck off Florida. And the leaders of the Whiskey Rebellion toasted Robespierre. Catherine the Great compared her rebels to American colonists. Jay Winnick, a senior scholar at the University of Maryland and author of the best-selling April 1865, has a new book out that's a masterful display of how notions incubated in one part of the world are born into others. In this case, France, America, and Old Russia. His book is called The Great Upheaval, America and the Birth of the Modern World, 1788 to 1800. Jay Winnick joins us in our studios. Thanks so much for being with us.
Scott, it's great to be here.
One of the things you make plain is that in the times we're talking about, revolutionaries, the kind of people who often are kept inside their countries these days, used to cross borders all the time. People would participate in two or three revolutions before they were done.
Right. It was really a remarkably fluid world in the 1790s. And what you see is that the great leaders of the day, they watched each other, they responded to each other, they reacted to each other. And it was stretching from an arc of revolution that went as far as Philadelphia to Paris to St. Petersburg to Cairo all the way to Constantinople. Let's look at a couple of the fascinating galaxy of figures beyond George Washington or John Adams or Alexander Hamilton or Thomas Jefferson. There was also Catherine the Great. There was Robespierre, the bloodthirsty dictator of France, or the dispirited king, Louis XVI, and Napoleon. These were all peers walking the world at the same stage.
People didn't go for weekends then. They would go to give a part of their lives to a place on the other side of the world.
Right. When you went to another part of the world, it was really a commitment. And obviously today there's this instantaneous communication fueled by the internet, by Blackberries, and we have this hubris that only we are so interconnected. Back then, obviously it took time for travel. Sometimes the Americans would wait 2-3 months to get information on what was taking place in Paris. But all the news was consumed. And what we see in this period was one magical moment where whether you were American, one of the founders, whether you were a Russian, whether you were a French, you felt that this was a great struggle, create the world in your image, whether that image was Allah's law or constitutional republicanism, whether it was democracy or whether it was enlightened despotism.
Bookends in some ways on your story are France and Russia. And let me bring up Russia first, because I guess we Americans can forget they were having their own expansion. There was a Russian frontier, which in many ways dwarfs America's frontier experience.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Scott. I mean, what they were doing in the south of Russia from the Crimea, they were creating a whole slew of mini St. Petersburgs, where Catherine the Great was expanding her empire. And in city after city, they brought in immigrants from Europe, from Germany. And both America, this young infant republic struggling to find its way, and this towering imperial power, Russia, were seen as these two virgin civilizations being made to bloom. And you saw it in Catherine's part of the world, and of course you saw it with the young colonists in America as well.
You do what you can to, in a sense, resuscitate Catherine the Great's image.
Catherine the Great is one of the great surprises that I found in my research here. Catherine was one of these remarkable, vital, charming women who was the longest reigning monarch in the European stage, played a significant role in America's founding, was the idol of the Enlightenment philosophers. Voltaire, the great Voltaire, and the great Montesquieu just revered her and idolized her.
They wrote her fan notes. She sent out these, what amounts to the creeds in behalf of a free press and free trial, and Voltaire would send her fan notes.
Right, and Voltaire was the most important philosopher in the world stage. He said at one point when he received her laws, he said, "Madame, they will be translated into every language into the world, into everything I can imagine. I prostrate myself." And then he also said, "What a world we live in. In France, the intellectuals are persecuted, and in Russia, Catherine the Great protects them." So she was really an extraordinary woman with many multifaceted sides, hard-nosed woman, an imperialist who waged war in the Muslim Empire on one hand, and who sought to crush the French Revolution, but by the same token, she was enlightened, she was educated. She even corresponded with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson on a universal dictionary that she was writing. And Washington, interestingly enough, he believed that her universal dictionary could actually help in promoting peace around the world. Very interesting. And, you know, when America was first founded, then our Francis Dana, our envoy, went to St. Petersburg. He was exchanging notes both with Washington and as well as John Adams. And John Adams says, Catherine the Great's recognition of us is a crucial pivot on our independence and our ability to take our rightful place in the world stage. That's what it depends upon.
How could it be that you had such an extraordinary collection of human talent in France during the period we're talking about? And the course of the French Revolution should wind up really being such a manifest depiction of the power of cruelty and injustice.
Right. It's really one of those mysteries that history has trouble sorting out. Of course, in the French Revolution, they originally started out galvanized by the American example. And it was believed, as Thomas Jefferson once said, their principles are our principles. And he actually believed that the liberty of the whole earth depended upon the successful conclusion of the French Revolution. But after the beheading of the king in 1793, France, despite all their talent, despite being the greatest civilization in the world, would descend into the worst sort of barbarism, notwithstanding the guillotine that was working overtime. And, mm-hmm. of course, young and old were beheaded. Aristocrats and peasants
were
beheaded.
Was it called the Great National Razor or something?
The Great National Razor, exactly. Yeah. At one point, priests were actually marched out and put on barges. They had their hands bound together, and they were drowned in the river. And the French called those Republican baptisms. In the end, because of what it did, France pointed the way towards the worst of totalitarianism and the worst sides of utopianism that we saw, for example, with Nazi Germany, Stalin's Russia, or, for example, Pol Pot's Cambodia.
What was the fascination that so many people had in Europe with the American Revolution, do you think?
What the Americans did is they took these Enlightenment ideas and they put them together in a way that no one else had ever seen before. A separation of powers, power divided by a federal government on one hand and state governments on the other. But more than that, they had thrown off the unjust yoke of a king and they had created a representative government. And the Americans were conscious of this. They felt they were creating the world anew. I mean, so did the French, for that matter, and so did Catherine the Great in Russia. But in the Americans,
they had more scores to settle, though.
Yes,
they
did.
And I wonder if that isn't the difference.
The passions were really so great in France and in Russia. Catherine never even gave her insurgents an opportunity because she harshly turned authoritarian, of course, leading the world down one path. But the magical thing about the Americans was when all this to and fro was happening, when crisis after crisis came, what the founders did is they always remained true to the ideas and ideals of their Constitution. Whereas in France, they took the Declaration of the Rights of Man and Citizen, some of the most ennobling words ever written in all of human history, and they scrapped it for the terror. Only the Americans, even when they underwent their war hysteria and a quasi-war with France, and even when they had this tense election in 1800, did they stay true to their ideals.
Jay, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Scott, thank you for having me.
Jay Winnick joining us in our studios. His new book is The Great Upheaval, America and the Birth of the Modern World, 1788 to 1800. And you can read an excerpt about the extravagant life and times of Louis XIV in an excerpt on our website, npr.org/books. You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.